I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
In the words of Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it is done.
In a stunning upset, 33-year-old Democratic Socialist State Assembly member Zohran Mamdani defeats Andrew Cuomo in the New York City Democratic mayoral primary. We'll air excerpts of Mamdani's speech. Then, as the Iran-Israel ceasefire continues to hold, we'll look at the NATO summit, where member states have agreed to vastly increase military spending.
I've been asking them to go up to 5% for a number of years, and they're going up to 5%. That's a big, from 2%. And a lot of people didn't even pay the 2%. So I think that's going to be very big news. NATO is going to become very strong with us.
Then to Gaza, where Israeli forces and drones have opened fire once again on Palestinians waiting for food. We'll speak to a doctor volunteering in Khan Yunis.
Every time we know that there's a few so-called food distribution, we know that there's going to be annihilation.
Then to Santa Ana, California. We'll speak to a U.S. Marine veteran whose father was brutally beaten and detained by Border Patrol agents while he worked as a landscaper at an IHOP. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A classified report by the Defense Intelligence Agency has concluded U.S. airstrikes on Iran ordered by President Trump failed to collapse Iran's nuclear facilities buried deep underground. That's according to three sources familiar with the report who say the Pentagon assessed Trump's attacks only set back Iran's nuclear program by months rather than the total obliteration claimed by the president. Trump and Secretary of State Marco Rubio rejected the DIA's findings, but on Tuesday, the Trump administration canceled congressional intelligence briefings on the Iran attack, prompting frustration from both Republicans and Democrats. Illinois Democrat Mike Quigley told the Washington Post, quote, they don't delay briefings that have good news, unquote. In Gaza, Al Jazeera reports at least 41 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks since midnight, including more Palestinians targeted by Israeli forces while seeking food and humanitarian aid. This comes as Israel's issued new forced displacement orders for northern Gaza. Palestinians say there's no safe place left for them to go.
We are scared and terrified by these new and repeated Israeli threats that have been ongoing since the start of this war, ordering us to go to the south of the Strip. But there is no safe area that we can go to. At this stage, we prefer to die where we are rather than leave the north of the Strip for the south.
Israel's repeated targeting of Palestinians seeking aid also comes as the Trump administration's approved $30 million in funding for the new shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed aid operation, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is run by private contracting firms led by former U.S. intelligence and military officers. In Ukraine, a barrage of Russian missiles struck in and around the southeastern city of Dnipro on Tuesday, killing at least 19 people, injuring more than 270, including children. It was among the deadliest attacks on Ukraine since Russia's invasion, causing extensive damage to schools, a cathedral, a sports arena, a music venue, and eight medical centers, along with residences and even a passenger train. Tuesday's attack came just one day after Russian strikes on the capital, Kyiv, killed 9 people and wounded more than 30 others. Russia's stepped-up violence came as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky traveled to the NATO summit in The Hague, where he's set to meet today with President Trump and other NATO leaders. President Trump has shared personal messages from NATO chief Mark Rutte, praising his decisive action against Iran's nuclear program and claiming U.S. strikes were not a violation of international law. Non-NATO nations have widely condemned the U.S. attacks on Iran's nuclear sites, which U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres says will cause, quote, serious damage to the international order, unquote. On Tuesday, Rutte welcomed leaders of NATO's 32 member nations to a summit in The Hague, where he echoed President Trump's call for a radical increase in military spending.
The defense investment plan that allies will agree in The Hague introduces a new baseline, 5% of GDP to be invested in defense. This is a quantum leap that is ambitious, historic, and fundamental to securing our future.
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez called NATO's 5% target unreasonable, said Spain would hold its military spending at just over 2% of gross domestic product. Meanwhile, protests are growing among citizens of NATO member nations. On Tuesday, demonstrators marched through Slovenia's capital to oppose NATO expansion.
This means for us that the remnants of social security that we still have, from kindergartens and schools to the collapsing health system and now pension reform, all of this will continue to be eaten away at, supposedly, because we would rather give it to militarization.
Here in New York, in a stunning victory, Democratic Socialist and New York State Representative Zohran Mamdani has defeated the disgraced former Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York City's Democratic mayoral primary. Cuomo conceded Tuesday night after Mamdani took a commanding lead with over 43% of voters in the ranked choice election. Mamdani took to the stage Tuesday night as supporters burst into applause at his election party.
Today, 8 months after launching this campaign, with the vision of a city that every New Yorker could afford, we have won.
If elected in November's general election, Mamdani would become the first Muslim mayor of New York, and at 33 years old, its youngest mayor in over a century. We'll have more on Mamdani's historic victory after headlines. A federal court in New York has ordered the Trump administration to facilitate the return of a Salvadoran immigrant who was wrongfully sent to El Salvador last month, despite the same court instructing Trump officials in May not to remove the man from the U.S. The Trump administration admitted it had removed Jordan Melgar Salmeron due to a confluence of administrative errors, unquote. This comes as immigration rights advocates nationwide are speaking up against the growing collaboration between local police and immigration and customs enforcement as the Trump administration intensifies its mass raids. In Los Angeles, community organizers rallied on Tuesday decrying LAPD's complicity with ICE. This is Ron Goches, member of the grassroots community defense group Unión del Barrio. Speaking outside the LAPD headquarters in downtown Los Angeles, she showed footage of police officers standing in line with ICE agents during a recent raid.
I think the world is seeing the repression that we're living in Los Angeles, where people are kidnapping our community. There are mass gunmen running around kidnapping people. And today, the police department collaborated, participated, protected these operations. So that's why we're out here today, to denounce the police department. This city is supposed to be a sanctuary city, but today it was proven that it is not.
To see our extended interview with Ron Goches, go to democracynow.org. Nearly 60,000 people are believed to be currently detained at ICE jails across the country, a record high, as Trump advisor Stephen Miller announced Operation At Large, a program to aggressively target immigrants with a daily quota of 3,000 ICE arrests per day. A damning new report has exposed Stephen Miller's financial interests in Palantir, a tech and AI company that stands to make millions of dollars off Trump's immigration raids and mass detention. The public report says Miller owns between $100,000 and $250,000 in assets at Palantir, which has been tapped by the Trump administration to compile information on U.S. residents for a master database based on tax returns, immigration records, and more. Palantir also has a $30 million contract with ICE to provide almost real-time visibility into immigrants' movements. Palantir was co-founded by the far-right, Trump-supporting billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel. The chair of the Senate Health Committee has called on a panel of vaccine advisors to delay plans to meet this week after accusing Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of stacking the panel with unqualified members and vocal vaccine critics. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, a medical doctor who spent decades promoting vaccines for children, wrote that the group Kennedy appointed lacks experience studying microbiology, epidemiology, or immunology. Cassidy infamously voted to confirm RFK Jr. in February, despite Kennedy's long history of promoting public health conspiracy theories and anti-vaccine disinformation. On Tuesday, RFK Jr. appeared before a House subcommittee where he was grilled over his pledge to Senator Cassidy that he would not change the makeup of the vaccine advisory panel. This is Democratic Congress member Kim Schreier of Washington.
You lied to Senator Cassidy. You have lied to the American people. You have lied to parents about vaccines for 20 years. And I also want to be clear that I will lay all responsibility for every death from a vaccine-preventable illness at your feet.
In Kenya, thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of Nairobi and other cities to mark a grim first anniversary of a youth-led uprising against high taxes, poor economic conditions, and the rule of President William Ruto that was met by massive police violence last year.
For me, today means that revolution is coming to Kenya, and I pray that this is a day that will change everything, that Ruto will go today.
In response to this week's peaceful protests, Kenyan police blocked major roads leading to Nairobi's central business district and draped government buildings with razor wire. The brutal crackdown on protests a year ago killed at least 60 people, with hundreds more injured. And Nigeria's government's posthumously pardoned nine activists known as the Ogoni Nine, who were hanged in 1995 after a sham military trial that targeted peaceful protesters demanding an end to the oil drilling and environmental damage in the Niger Delta. Among those receiving a pardon is the late Ken Sarawiwa, who led the movement against the Shell Oil Company's practices in Ogoni Land. In a statement, Amnesty International's Nigeria director said the pardons fall far short of the justice of the Ogoni Nine need and deserve. He added, quote, the execution of these activists nearly 30 years ago has given the Nigerian government and oil companies, including Shell, license to crack down on protests and intimidate people in the Niger Delta who've been demanding justice and an end to their toxic pollution. Unquote. To see our investigation of what happened at that time, go to democracynow.org. Drilling and killing Chevron and Nigeria's oil dictatorship. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
History unfolded here in New York City Tuesday night as Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani carried out a stunning upset, defeating Andrew Cuomo in the New York City Democratic mayoral primary. Mamdani, a 33-year-old New York State Assembly member, was the first choice of over 43% of voters in the ranked choice election. Outside funders shattered records as they spent more than $25 million to back former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's attempt at a political comeback 4 years after he resigned over sexual misconduct allegations by at least 11 women who were former staffers. In contrast, Mamdani ran an energetic grassroots campaign focused on making the city affordable for working people and was endorsed by independent Senator Bernie Sanders and Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As the results became clear late last night, Cuomo conceded and called Mamdani to congratulate him. In November, Zohran Mamdani will face off against the current mayor, Eric Adams, as well as a Republican candidate and possibly former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who recently launched a new third-party line, though it's unclear he'll run. If Mamdani wins in November, he will become New York City's first Muslim mayor and youngest mayor in over a century. In his victory speech Tuesday night, Zohran Mamdani laid out why he won.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. A city where they can do more than just struggle. One where those who toil in the night can enjoy the fruits of their labor in the day. Where hard work work is repaid with a stable life. Where 8 hours on the factory floor or behind the wheel of a cab is enough to pay the mortgage. It is enough to keep the lights on. It is enough to send your kid to school. Where rent-stabilized apartments are actually stabilized. Where buses are fast and free. Where childcare doesn't cost more than CUNY. And where public safety keeps us truly safe. And it's where the mayor will use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism. To stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors. And to govern our city as a model for the Democratic Party. A party where we fight for working people with no apology. A life of dignity should not be reserved for a fortunate few. It should be one that city government guarantees for each and every New Yorker. If this campaign has demonstrated anything to the world, it is that our dreams can become reality. Dreaming demands hope. And when I think of hope, I think of the unprecedented coalition of New Yorkers that we have built. For this is not my victory. This is ours.
That's Democratic Socialist Orhan Mamdani speaking at his victory party last night after he defeated former Governor Andrew Cuomo in the New York City Democratic mayoral primary in what some are calling a political revolution. He also thanked his parents, his mother, the film director Mira Nair, and his father, Columbia University professor Mahmoud Mamdani. Special thanks to Laura Bastidas for being there. Mamdani's victory was celebrated at multiple massive jubilant watch parties hosted by New York City chapter of Democratic Socialist America, which played a key role in organizing his campaign. Meanwhile, the Working Families Party endorsed four candidates in a strategy to beat Cuomo, with Mamdani as number one, and said they would refuse to offer Cuomo the Working Families Party ballot line, even if he became the Democratic nominee. That will not be an issue now. For more, we're joined by Maurice Mitchell, the national director for the Working Families Party, based here in New York. We last spoke to you during our coverage of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Can you respond to Mamdani's upset victory and the surge of grassroots support, especially young people, as he walked from one end of Manhattan to the other?
Well, Amy, Zohran's campaign is a bellwether. This is one of the first major primaries of the year, and Zohran's surge is, to me, clear proof that people want leaders who will stand up to work for working people, and the contrast couldn't be more clear. So you have Zohran, who walked from the northernmost part of Manhattan all the way down, right? And you have Cuomo, who basically, he ran a campaign where nobody could find him. He was running away from his record. He ran a campaign that was based on fear. He ran a campaign that was emblematic of the status quo politics of the past. You know, Cuomo's somebody who grew up in the governor's mansion and spent his career making deals to please his billionaire donors. And Zohran built a grassroots campaign of everyday New Yorkers, a very broad and diverse set of folks. And when you look at where his campaign was able to win and where our coalition was able to win, it's every single part of New York. This is a resounding victory for Zohran, for our movement, but for everyday working New Yorkers. And really, this to me is a bellwether of more to come across the country. This is an example of the type of politics that we think would help create a multiracial working class alignment against authoritarianism, but for a type of politics that is hopeful, that is visionary, that says we want something. We don't simply want to fight against something. I think it's an example of more to come.
Maurice, normally whoever wins the Democratic primary for mayor is basically a shoo-in to be elected mayor. But this year, things are somewhat different. You have the incumbent mayor running as an independent. Of course, you have a Republican, Curtis Sliwa of the Guardian Angels. Looks like he is running as on the Republican end. You have Jim Walden and a major lawyer in the city running, and of course, the possibility that Cuomo himself will run. What do you see happening in terms of the Democratic establishment that opposed Mamdani? Where will many of them go now?
Well, you know, last night we saw within hours a resigned, defeated, embattled Governor Cuomo give a concession speech. And to me, that's an example of a failed set of politics, a failed approach, a campaign that used every trick in the book, used all the tactics, and was backed by, you know, $25 million of billionaire money from, you know, folks like Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, right? Some really, really bad people who are advancing authoritarianism, you know, Trump donors like Bill Ackman. So what I saw was a complete collapse of that strategy. And I think, you know, the Cuomo folks are probably rethinking any ideas that they might have, but it's pretty obvious where the momentum is. And I know in the general election, Zoran and his coalition is going to run a very rigorous general election that, that doesn't take anything for granted or any New Yorker for granted, the same type of campaign that was run in the primary. And I feel very, very, very confident that Zoran is not simply the Democratic nominee, but is the presumptive mayor based on the momentum of this campaign and this movement. This is one of the most exciting electoral movements of our era.
I think, Mo, that no one can deny that Zoran Mamdani made quite a splash.
Your wreck as the next mayor of New York City. Let's plunge into the details.
So that was the video of Zoran Mamdani jumping into the Atlantic Ocean in his suit, saying, I'm freezing the rent. I want to end with Zoran Mamdani himself and another part of his speech. Of course, we're going to talk about this over the next weeks as we lead into the November election. This is Zoran Mamdani in his victory speech last night.
In these dark times, I know that it is harder than ever to keep faith in our democracy. It has been attacked by billionaires and their big spending, by elected officials who care more about self-enrichment than the public trust, and by authoritarian leaders who rule through fear. But above all, our democracy has been attacked from within. For too long, New Yorkers have strained to find a leader who represents us, who puts us first. And we have been betrayed time and again. After so many disappointments, the heart hardens, belief becomes elusive. And when we no longer believe in our democracy, it only becomes easier for people like Donald Trump to convince us of his worth. For billionaires to convince us that they must always lead. As FDR said, democracy has disappeared in several other great nations, not because the people disliked democracy, but because they had grown tired of unemployment and insecurity, of seeing their children hungry while they sat helpless in the face of government confusion and weakness. In desperation, they chose to sacrifice liberty in the hope of getting something to eat. New York, if we have made one thing clear over these past months, it is that we need not choose between the two. We can be free and we can be fed. We can demand what we deserve. And together we have built a movement where everyday New Yorkers recognize themselves in our vision of democracy.
Democratic socialist Zoran Mamdani in his victory speech last night in Long Island City. This is Democracy Now! Special thanks to Mauricio Mitchell, National Director for the Working Families Party. Coming up to Gaza, where Israeli forces and drones have opened fire once again on Palestinians lined up for food. Stay with us.
Where there were deserts, I saw fountains, and like cream, the waters rise. And we strolled, and there together, we none to laugh or criticize. Well, the leopard and the lamb lay together, but truly bound. Well, I was hoping, in my hoping, to recall what I'd found. I was dreaming, in my dreaming, God knows of your view. As I surrender into my sleeping, I commit my dream to you.
People Have the Power by Patti Smith, joined by Michael Stipe, performing at Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary years ago. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In Gaza, at least 41 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks since midnight, including people targeted by Israeli forces while seeking food. Hundreds of people have been killed, more than 1,000 wounded while looking for food at the private militarized so-called aid sites, which replaced UN distribution centers in May. The entire population of Gaza, 2.1 million people, experience prolonged shortages of food. 500,000 are in a catastrophic situation of hunger, acute malnutrition, starvation, and illness, according to the World Health Organization. This comes as UNICEF's warning Gaza is also on the brink of what amounts to a man-made drought, with children at risk of dying of thirst due to Israel's blockade. UNICEF's also reporting more than 5,000 children under the age of 5 were treated last month for acute malnutrition amidst Israel's near-total blockade of aid. In a moment, we'll be joined by Dr. Mark Bronner, volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Gaza. But first, let's turn to a video of him speaking from the hospital.
More than 100 children that are suffering from malnutrition and starvation. Many are premature infants who absolutely 100% rely on this formula and specialized formulas to live. There's no substitute. If they try anything else, they'll die. There are thousands in the community. They are 48 hours away from having no formula. This is not a made-up crisis. This is real. This is a 27-week preemie here who has ARDS, has respiratory problems, has feeding issues, and needs formula. There are 48 hours until it's gone.
Dr. Mark Bronner joins us live now from Nasser Hospital in Gaza in Khan Yunus. Dr. Bronner, thanks so much for being with us. Can you describe the situation? Once again, we're reporting since midnight, 41 Palestinians have been gunned down. Yesterday, on Monday, Israeli forces killed at least 71 Palestinians, including 50 people waiting to receive aid. Can you explain? You have been treating some of the people who were injured. What are their injuries? What is happening?
Thanks, Amy. You know, we're seeing a very predictable pattern. Shortly after the so-called aid distribution centers open, we just get we hear ambulances flying towards the hospital, private vehicles, donkey-drawn carts bringing in people, streams after streams of people. They often have isolated gunshot wounds to their head, to their neck, in the very center of their chest. There's very high lethality, so a large percentage of the patients that come in are already dead. And then we kind of move quickly, transition quickly to the next patient. We're seeing lots of, you know, children, adolescents, teenagers. We're seeing, you know, some older people, but it's really more execution style than the typical blast injuries that we see, which tend to be more multi systemic, you know, like head, neck, chest, and abdomen with shrapnel. And these are really isolated, targeted types of injuries that are much more consistent with the firsthand reports that we're getting. And a lot of the video that we're watching from the so